bot didn't show up. I'm going to check why, but you should feel free to proceed. I'll try to fix that in the background.
Yeah, thanks. So we do have recordings, so I will proceed. So I'm going to review the agenda. So today we're joined by Philip Sheldrake on generative identity. That's going to be one of the last agenda items after we go through the usual list. Welcome to CCG. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items have to be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Ensure that you have a W-3 account and also accept the contributor license agreement. These minutes and audio recording of everything said on this call are archived on the CCG GitHub. And we use IRC to queue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. Or use the Jitsi text chat, which is linked to IRC. All attendees should type present plus. The bot is in the process of joining, I believe. You might have to type present plus once again to note your attendance now that the bot has joined. In IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder. Q plus, you can check the agenda that was sent over email if you're not sure how to do this. If you're not on IRC, just simply ask to be put on the queue. You can unmute and ask yourself. And when you're on the queue, please be brief so that the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always recue yourself. This meeting is held by voice, not by IRC, so we don't recommend off-topic IRC comments because they're subjected to deletion from the record. And we want to maintain a single thread of conversation so everyone can participate. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. So at this point, we would love to have a volunteer to scribe. I will start running through the list, the scribe list, but before that, does anyone volunteer to scribe? No one volunteers in the next 20 seconds, I'm gonna start working through the scribe list and hopefully someone will accept. I'm going to start working for the scribe list. So starting with Christopher Allen, if you're here. With a spa, if you're here. Norman Reed. Adam Lemon. Justin Richer. Ganesh Anand. Jonathan Holt, are you here? Kelly Cooper, are you here? Adrian Gropper. Chris Wazinski.
Yeah, I can try to scribe. I'm bad at it, but I can do it.
Thank you. We're very grateful. So continuing through the the agenda, for volunteering, Adrian. We really appreciate it. We're now going to move to introductions and reintroductions allow people to introduce themselves to the community. So is there anyone new on the call who would like to introduce themselves? Feel free to cue yourself or just start speaking up. I see that, Philip, you've raised your hand in Jitsi. So I will queue for you and acknowledge you. Philip, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yes, as this is my first experience of this community group, I just wanted to say hello up front and thanks very much for inviting me. I look forward to a good conversation later on. Thanks, Wayne.
Great, thank you, Philip. Would anyone else like to introduce themselves to the community? Okay, moving on to reintroductions. Is anyone willing to give a reintroduction? Maybe you've changed employment status, maybe you have started a new project or have some interests that you'd like to share. Feel free to use the reintroduction for that. Would anyone like to reintroduce themselves? Feel free to queue up or just speak out. We all know each other, and that's great. Moving on to announcements and reminders. Generally, we are taking a break for the winter holidays, as I'm sure everyone is experiencing in their day-to-day. The holiday slog is upon us, and we will hopefully be festive and celebrate respective holidays for folks who are participating in that. So we will not be having CCG meetings for the next 2 weeks, the 22nd and the 29th. We will resume in the new year, and hopefully after a lot of rest, and get back on those work items and moving things through the pipe. So, that's one announcement. Another announcement is, thank you to, Ted, who has, pointed out, among others, that we incorrectly use the CEST time for European time. CET is more, unambiguous, and we have changed that in, the agenda that we'll be sending out. So, thank you, Ted. Does anyone have an announcement that they'd like to share with the community? Feel free to queue yourselves to make an announcement. Kalia, you have the floor.
Sure. I wanted to let folks know about a conference that I'm co-convening with Awesome Ottman and Jack Callahan, called the Thoughtful Biometrics Conference. It's going to be 3 days. February 1st, 3rd, and 5th. And it's going to be, to bring together folks from biometrics community, the scientists who build those systems, the digital identity communities, and civil society and advocacy groups working around critical issues in that area.
Thank you so much.
I'll put a link to the, event.
And please add the dates and the stuff I missed, Kalia.
Yeah, thanks so much for posting a link in the IRC. It's a very sensitive and important topic that requires a lot of thinking, so I'm glad that it seems that some thinking is happening. Does anyone else have an announcement they'd like to share with the community? Okay. Great, moving on to the next section. We're going to go through the action items that have been selected for review next. I'm pasting a link right now as to how to access that GitHub in IRC. It's a filter that has open issues with label review next as selected by the chairs. So the first item here is VCPR's under maintenance charter and talking about how we are going to maintain the verifiable credential specification after the verifiable claims group has completed their work. Kim, are you here? Would you like to talk about that?
Yes. Let's see. So we had our first set of PRs against the VC data model, which is under maintenance charter in the CCG. And I think that the one of the PRs that I noticed was close to moving forward, but given that it was our first actual PR under maintenance charter, I wanted to, give the floor to, I think, Manu, Dan Burnett, Ivan, whoever may be present to talk about how to move that forward and whether anything's needed from the group. Manu?
Sure. Thanks, Kim. We thought we had everything set up and ready to go. And then, the W3C staff contact, Yvonne, jumped in and said, well, actually, there's some details here that matter around how we process these, comments. So, we're still working through those. I believe what we need next is just to make sure that Yvonne's happy with the process that we put together. He wasn't aware that we had put together a process and that kind of stuff. And he has read through it. And so I think just a little more discussion before we start merging anything in. Unfortunately, I think the process is going to be a little more heavyweight than what we would have liked, even for simple editorial changes. So anyway, all that to say, we're working through it. There's nothing, no big blockers right now. Once Yvonne's happy with, you know, and we're going to have to do like a checklist now for all editorial changes and all normative changes. And once Yvonne's happy with that, I think we'll get the go ahead to start merging things into the verifiable credential spec. That's it.
Thanks, Manu. And one follow-up question in case you have the answer. Do you know who is the we that you're referring to working with W3C staff to figure out alignment on the process?
So in theory, it has to be the chairs of the CCG, the W3C staff contact, and the chairs of the VC working group. So they're working group chairs, working group staff contact, CCG chairs, and then the editors of the spec. Unfortunately, it's a lot of people, and it'll take a bit of time to coordinate.
Okay, I've added a comment to the issue, just indicating that for transparency.
Okay,
cool.
Thanks.
So the next item that I will review now is NPM, and then we will review the infrastructure task force proposal after that, and those are the end of our action item reviews. So with respect to NPM, I think if Mike Prorock is here or Brian Munns or anyone in the thread would like to talk about the importance of NPM, how it would simplify things and what the benefits would be, would love to hear about it. Clearly there is some benefit here, but it's great to hear directly from folks.
I am here and queued up. So thanks so much. Yeah, basically the gist is this, when we're producing assets, from a group, that are going to get utilized in other projects, we really want that to come from a centralized repo. NPMJS acts as that for, TypeScript, JavaScript, any of your broad node type stuff. And in this case, with Universal Wallet, with VCHTTPI, right, we've got a number of projects that really could benefit from that being recognized as a W3C asset that's being maintained as a W3C project, CCG project, as opposed to coming from via Transmute or Measure.io or, some other various private namespace. And so that way it's just very clear that, hey, if you're pulling this in, it's coming from the W3C CCG namespace. Who do you go to for help? You go back to the CCG project, not necessarily to the individual fork for, that's being, maintained by one of the contributing companies, et cetera. So that's kind of the main, just there is just, one, it's recognition. Two, it helps us, manage that as like, yes, this is a CCG asset as opposed to just one particular company, contributing or two companies contributing, et cetera.
Great. In response to this, we as chairs have discussed NPM, and we do see the benefit, as you described, being able to rely on dependencies so that it's easier for people interested in using work items to actually use them. Our concerns with respect to NPM is we don't want the scope to run amok as to what gets hosted into the W3C CCG NPM. And we especially don't want, stray code added in that may have bugs or is encouraged to be used in a production setting. I think that if we set the scope to be more limited to things like perhaps test vectors or reference implementations or example implementations or even some kind of vocabulary that is community governed without, implementing cryptography or anything like that, just data values, that's the general direction that I think we would be supportive of, as opposed to code level dependencies in production use cases. and gonna recognize. And if you have a response to that, Mike, I'll recognize you before Manu.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, the yeah, I fully agree with that kind of scoping. I think that makes perfect sense, especially as we're looking at things like traceability vocab, where that needs to be shared as a global resource and asset, and doing things like reference implementations that then you are building off of, right, is important. I think as we start to think about later on down the line, for sure, things like Universal Wallet could evolve in a direction, or BCH TTPI API, right, could evolve into a direction where that is getting used as a production test case to validate interop for code and things like that. And in some cases, it kind of already is, even though they're in a rough state. But that does mean that, yes, we are going to have to get more rigor around, you know, approval processes, et cetera. I know some of the stuff where, for sure, going through that level of rigor that I think is important from an automated testing and CI standpoint. But that's an awesome and important call out that, like, yeah, let's keep scope limited for now. And as we go, if things go further, right, that should be done as a community. Let's figure that out and figure out the appropriate test cases we need to ensure that, hey, if something's going up, that it has gone through the appropriate level of testing to go up.
Yeah, completely agreed with that. I believe Manu has more to add to that. Manu, you have the floor.
Yeah, so I mean, a general plus one to what Mike's the request that Mike's raising. It will. So you know, Digital Bazaar has been hosting and putting together some of the sites for the JSON LD context, and has been kind of dealing with, you know, the uptime for that and all that kind of stuff. We would love to put it into the community, with the caveat, the same caveat that both of you have mentioned. It, you know, these things are used in production. And for example, if we were to accidentally, if any one of us were to accidentally mess up one of the NPM releases, for example, we could be looking at production downtime. So, we should definitely talk more about how we, have this community resource that everyone can use, but how we also ensure that people can use it in production and be, feel safe, doing so. One way to do that, of course, is to fork the repository and set it in stone for your company. But so plus one to what we're thinking of doing. But it is a much higher bar. And we absolutely would need to make sure that companies are paying their own personnel to maintain these repositories. This is not a volunteer effort, you know, kind of thing. It has to be a paid effort. That's it.
Yeah, agreed. And just to kind of rephrase my understanding of that, to have another perspective here, it's there are a lot more concerns if this becomes a critical dependency in your production applications. And it used to be under your control in your source code repositories, and now it is a community managed item, right? That very concerned for members in that relying way, as they probably are themselves. So we need to. In order to have that openness, we need higher reliability. We need clear lines of governance. Who is able to contribute to that? Who gets the say on what gets merged in or not? These are really important things to figure out for anyone interested in using this in production. But there are some lighter weight use cases that we can start with to test the waters prior to moving on to those more serious use cases. And that, therefore, there are some next actions that are possible. Great. Any more comments on this issue? Oh, Mike, did you have another say?
Just to follow up, I think you hit the nail on the head, though. It's let's start with the low-hanging, you know, kind of test case and vocab stuff. But just to echo what, you know, Manu was saying, I know they've had a great commitment from their side of Digital Bazaar as far as paying good, high-quality resources to contribute, manage, et cetera. I know Transmute's done the same. We're obviously doing the same here at Measure.io, but that's a good pattern that works well. Open source broadly, right?
Yeah, exactly. And just to kind of reaffirm our position, my position as a chair, like, you know, it matters a lot that community members feel confident and comfortable contributing here. And, if they depend on one of these items and it fails for a customer because of a change they're not responsible for. It's a horrible outcome and really horrible on the community for doing that. So maintaining high quality so that we can, you know, maintain the community trust is very important to all of us. So that's... So without any more on the queue, we'll move over to discussion on the infrastructure task force, which was proposed in issue 168. There's been some interest in that thread. Since I'm the one who wrote the proposal, I'll kind of go over the proposal itself. And basically, there are a lot of technical infrastructure items that we have to do as chairs. And also members of the community, such as Manu and Amy and a lot of other folks, have been stepping up and just contributing significantly. And we thought it was best to create a transparent process so that it's open participation, and it allows us to spread the load for to community members who have been willing to contribute in some way, either through their own efforts or financially. In a way that everyone in the community can have as much introspection into as possible to make sure we're all above board here. Specifically, this would the responsibilities of this task force would be to manage the technology inventory, including this teleconferencing system and note-taking infrastructure that we're using right now, including NPM repositories, figuring out the governance and support efforts, what kind of resourcing we'd need to get to those different milestones that we were just mentioning. And we have cloud services and things cost money. So that needs to be managed. Being able to maintain the security posture of the CCG, as we have even work items that have vocabularies on NPM, for example, you know, there's something at stake there because people are using them and relying on them, and we don't want to be undermined in by an attacker. And then finally, creating and maintaining documentation so that it always reflects the current state of systems, and allowing anyone to join this task force and come to speed asynchronously just by reading the documentation, so it is an inclusive and open effort. So through the thread, there has been indicated interest. There have been a variety of questions asked by my co-chair, Heather, and subsequent answers and discussion. And I see recently that there were some concerns that Heather has raised. And Heather, I was wondering if you would like to go over your concerns so that we can, in front of the community, so that we can start to hear them out and figure out if there's a way that we can address them. It doesn't have to be done all on this call, but it would be nice to get the discussion going.
Yeah, sure. But I see there are a couple other folks on the queue in front of me. So,
of course. Yeah. So, if you would like to give your time to Ori and Manu, I can let them go first.
Yeah, that's fine. They're in front of me in the queue.
Okay. I'll assume that I'm up first then. So, Wayne, you basically just answered a lot of the questions that I had. I was trying to distill from the previous topic and the current topic what the action items and next steps are for members who are waiting on NPM repos or NPM repositories, and how I can help set that up. Or if you want, you know, somebody who knows how to do NPM deployments and security around that kind of thing, I'm, you know, volunteering to definitely do that, since we already kind of have any place, anytime you have commit control over a CCG repo that ends in an NPM module, even if you don't have publish access, you have the ability to cause a production disruption. So I think there are a number of folks participating in CCG work items today who already have that great power and responsibility. And, you know, I think those people should be automatically included in this maintainers list, because they actually already are maintaining infrastructure in that way.
Yep, thanks. One of the goals is to provide that kind of accountability and transparency so that if someone does violate trust, then they can be held accountable to that and the right things can be taken after that. So thanks for your comments, Manu.
Yeah, just in general to speak in favor of the infrastructure task force. As many of you know, for a long time, the community was running on DigitalBazaar infrastructure, and the most recent iteration, like the system we're on right now, was an attempt to move away from that and create a community resource that is owned by the community, managed by the community, run by the community. And it's been really great to see people stepping forward to like volunteer to run that infrastructure, and, you know, provide money, for that infrastructure. So, you know, I think that's a good sign. I do think that we'd need to, address, you know, all of the concerns before rushing into doing anything. Because clearly there are concerns around, like, what happens if this stuff is used for production? You know, how do we make sure that we don't fall into a tragedy of the commons? How do we make sure that this infrastructure is actually helping, chairs and community members run meetings seamlessly rather than being a burden? So, you know, I think in order to really have those conversations, we need a group of people that get together on a fairly regular basis, to talk about those things and how we're going to do those, things. That's it.
Thank you. And Heather.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay, cool. Yeah. So I just want to be clear, like, I am not questioning whether we need to do, some of the work and the documentation. I'm really concerned that we're creating another level of hierarchy and like another bucket that we can just kind of throw stuff in. And, that adds a level of management for the chairs that also, you know, does also add a level of, you know, I know the idea is to increase transparency, and accountability, but I am concerned with that additional level of hierarchy that, we do lose some accountability. When this was initially proposed, it was to address, some of the final bits of work that needed to be done to do the minutes of the meeting as we switched over to Jitsi and overall deal with the bumps with Jitsi. And, we managed that through normal, you know, work items. And when I was, we were reviewing this, you know, it looked to me like there were other things kind of thrown in. And so I'm concerned about it's too open-ended. I'm not really like, what does infrastructure mean? Like that's a lot of the work that chairs do already. So I'm just concerned that it can be used to throw a bunch of stuff into this bucket. And, it's not necessarily, going to increase management or transparency. Now, I guess I see us being able to manage a lot of these things through the regular work item or regular, you know, project management infrastructure that we have. One of the examples is doing an audit of the different systems, and like I would like to see this done to understand the scope. And, you know, I don't think we need the task force to move forward on the audit. And that would make me feel more comfortable about understanding what the scope of this work is. The other concern I have is, we already have three other task force, and this is a fourth task force. And, we've also been approached, and by we, I mean, the chairs have been approached by others in the community to want to start task forces. And so, you know, one or two or three task forces adds to some management, but, you know, we don't really have any guidelines or documentations for task forces. I've worked on it. We're in the process, the chair's in the process of iterating on that. So, you know, I think, we need to be conscious about the things that are appropriate for our task force, which aren't. And that, you know, we don't want to stop the work being done, but again, it's the another level of hierarchy and another level of management. And finally, you know, all of us in this community are very comfortable with technology. And, there's been two different kinds of groups that there's been a very, loud group that wants to use, Jitsi. And then there's been a not so loud group. In fact, they've really not really spoken up at all, except in comments on the surveys, multiple surveys I've done, that are comfortable with Zoom and want to use Zoom. And we're not going to discuss switching over to Zoom. I think that that ship has already sailed. But I just want to point out, like, as someone who is, not as comfortable with details of technology that many of you are, that, you know, we have a level of comfort with technology and we're okay using new things. And thus we don't think that there is an overhead cost to utilize a different type of technology. We think, oh, using Zoom or using Jitsi, it's the same cost. It's the same obstacle for someone, but it's really not. And one of my goals as a chair is to increase the diversity and the participation of this community group to people that are not as comfortable in the technology sense, like designers and anthropologists and product people. And even last week on the call with Dignari, the CTO mentioned he was like, yeah, we're not going to show a video because we didn't know how video would work with Jitsi. And, you know, a lot of people are coming and using Jitsi for the first time ever. And in some ways that's great, but I just am concerned that there's not an awareness of this technology obstacle. And my goal as a chair is to lower that barrier and make it as easy and comfortable as possible for people that are not comfortable, not as familiar with these types of technologies to participate in it. And so, you know, I'm open to addressing those issues. I am not against doing the work that this task force has done. However, I don't want to add more, hierarchy and management. And I do want to have more accountability and transparency, but I think we can get that without having to do a task force.
Thank you, Heather. Yeah, I wanted to respond to some of your points with my perspective, Heather, as a co-chair. And personally, I do spend a lot of time on the infrastructure. I think Manu Sporny might spend even more time than I do. I think that was definitely the case over the past few months. And for me, I would much prefer the additional burden of hierarchy and management of a task force with six and more volunteers and also financial resourcing versus my current responsibilities, which could be delegated across that group. I think it would be actually a lot less than that burden for me, you know, would greatly appreciate the opportunity to work with those folks. And right now, we are using, you know, personal credit cards and things to pay for the infrastructure, and that there is possibly an above board way to transparently accept funds that are for that purpose, maybe tax advantages for people who want to give the funds. We don't know yet. You know, that is extremely attractive. I think you make a good point about scope creep, and we should keep it very tight in whether we should prioritize documentation or to enable that, I'm very open to. I think that I'm happy to spend some time on audits of the system as is, but adding the burden of extensive audits prior to continuing, you know, is a little difficult. But it is one of the listed potential items the group can work on if we do want to document about a dozen services on Azure and some other things. That's my response to the audit. I'm willing to contribute more to that if it would, make everyone more comfortable. And to the last point about technology, and awareness of people's experience with it, I think we have been asking for feedback from the community in terms of what they use, generally following W3C's guideline to avoid strong objections. There seem to be a lot of strong objections to the use of Zoom. So I think that's one of the reasons why we might have shifted in that direction. But I agree with you that we should always be listening to people and figuring out what their preferences are. So, and I see next on the queue is Manu.
Yeah, I wanted to agree with a lot of what Heather said. I think so. Taking a step back. Like it's a wonderful thing that we're having this conversation. This group has 31, you know, roughly 30 plus people showing up every single week. I don't really know of any other community group at W3C that has that much participation on a regular basis in people go and people even contemplating that we may want to have, you know, production infrastructure done in a community group. Like this is new stuff that's happening, you know, at W3C. So I think that's really great. And as a result, we're feeling some growing pains from it. I, like Heather, am very concerned about scope creep, primarily because like everyone wants to do the thing, but once it comes time to actually do the thing, you'll find that a lot of volunteers don't actually step forward and do the work. Again, if it's all volunteer run, it's very difficult to do. So all that to say, you know, the NPM stuff like scares the hell out of me, but at the same time, there's definitely a desire to do it. And I can see why it would be a good thing for the CG to host it. So I think what we're trying to do here is figure out a way that we can scale, in a way that doesn't have the negative impacts that, I think Heather has identified. Those are very good things to worry about. The inclusivity, you know, not understanding as a technologist what other people may find daunting, is also, I believe, valid. You know, it is like people haven't used Jitsi. They have no idea if video is going to work on it or not. We have had, you know, outages, you know, with Jitsi. We're all trying to, you know, our best to work our way, you know, through all of this. So, you know, I think a lot of this discussion has to do with growing pains and how we get through it. I'm not hearing anyone asking or being unreasonable, you know, in this discussion. Like we all have concerns. We're all worried about it. We don't want scope creep. I think we really want to focus on stabilizing before we grow. And so like, let's finish the work that we started and make it so that our meeting infrastructure is rock solid before, you know, trying to do the next thing. So anyway, I think this is like a really good, healthy conversation. I'm glad we're having it. That's it.
Anyone who has any other thoughts or responses, feel free to add yourselves to the queue. Ted, you have the floor.
Just to say that task forces tend to be task-driven. And if there's a task that needs to be done, and you assemble a force to do the task, and when the task is done, the force is disbanded. This sounds much more like subcommittee technology management or something along those lines. So it's a little bit less behind a corner in the door, but it's still, you know, the people involved in it are the ones who care the most about it and really need to worry about what those letters and numbers stand for. And so those are the people who should be scared by the technology things, implications. It doesn't need to be in front of everybody. That doesn't mean that it's behind a closed door, but it's still not something that everybody needs to see.
Thanks. Any other comments before we move on to our speaker? And, with 20 minutes remaining, I think it's a great suggestion to move on to our speaker. Phil, sorry for the slight delay in the beginning, but we're really grateful to have you here with us to talk about generative identity and some of the potential consequences of the work items in this group. Would you like to give a brief introduction start talking about generative identity?
Thanks very much, Wayne. And thanks also to Kim for suggesting that I join you today. It's a privilege to have some of your time just to outline some work that I think it could be very relevant to this community group. So I'm a professional engineer with a particular focus on process and complex systems. I work with the Akasha Foundation, which was established by Mihai, a co-founder of Ethereum. And I'm a web science PhD candidate at the University of Southampton researching identity. So I'll just stick three links associated with each of those in the chat here for convenience. So to generative identity, it's really important, I've discovered, as I've tried to talk to this, that I emphasize that generative identity is not an architecture. It's definitely not a solution. The use of generative is simply to describe approaching digital identity for psychological, sociological, and ecological health. For me, those three scales describe the domain of interest that anybody working in identity, in digital identity, should be concerned with. I was invited to write a chapter for the upcoming SSI book that Alex and Drummond are co-editing. And then the draft for that chapter then formed a critique of self-sovereign identity as we find it in 2020. And I can speak to that critique now. Everybody on this call will know that if you just introduce the idea of identity or digital identity in conversation, you really need to spend another 5 or 10 minutes up front to understand whether you and the persons you're speaking with are actually talking about the same thing at all. In fact, I've seen some comment on the word identity that it's used in so many different ways that it's almost useless a concept. So in order to try and bring some sense to it, particularly when talking to people who haven't had the fortune to spend a lot of time researching various conceptualizations of identity, we wanted to find a way to categorize, if you like, identity in a way that would throw some light on the situation that we find ourselves in with SSI and similar designs for digital identity. And that categorization is noun-like and verb-like. Riffing off some work from Buckminster Fuller, who wrote a book called I Seem to Be a Verb. So what do we mean by noun-like and verb-like? Well, actually, let's start with verb-like because that's the one that's as old as us as a species. That's about identity being in flux, being dynamic. Whereas noun-like implies that it's sort of static, by design, in fact. The idea that when we bureaucratized identity, there was an urgency at a societal level to register a birth, register a death, and collect taxes in between, effectively. And so having an unchanging identifier was kind of mission critical. And so the societal coders that predated everybody here, whose code was legal as opposed to technical, they enshrined laws that riffed off that as the dominant form of identity. And like as not, when you speak to the man on the street about identity, the first thing they think of is the bureaucratization of identity, the birth certificate, the driving license, the national ID card, the passport. I think that in many ways that has been a dominant frame of mind amongst many people involved in encoding SSI, developing the idea. And it might be that it's been inherited because legal code was the legacy and that we've had to build on. It might be that SSI is effectively assembled from cryptographic primitives, so there's that sort of Newtonian assembly that lends itself to the simplicity of noun-like identity versus the more complex domain of the verb-like. And it also could have, in North American culture, some relation back to another kind of self-sovereign movement, which would seek to reify the individuated, the atomistic person as the unit that matters most. So I don't know how we find ourselves in the situation where we are, but I perceive that SSI and associated technologies, protocols, have that noun-like mentality it's been rendered in code. Now, when I'm trying to look at, to therefore explain the difference between manifesting in digital code a noun-like identity rather than the verb-like, I start to then try and explain that kind of conceptualization of identity doesn't necessarily mean identity stands alone. There's a triarchy of identity relationships And then the information that flows between those identities, individual and collective. And that triarchy is that in fact so incredibly interwoven that I can imagine that another language, another culture would just have one word to describe it as opposed to these three words that we're now trying to see how they interact. And effectively, our identities, plural, ourselves, are formed through a narrative process that psychologists are very fluent in. Those internal narratives are informed by the interactions, the information flow between others in relationships. And those interactions are modulated by the identities. And this is forever changing. It's social, reciprocal, concurrent, and forever in flux. And I know that many people on this call feel that, get that. I've spoken to more than a few people on this call before, so thank you again for your patience for sitting through hearing it again. I was chatting with Taylor Kendall via LinkedIn, and he shared a post that he published on LinkedIn this time last year, which speaks to this complexity. Now, one of the things that I feel is then missing from the digital identity community at the moment is equal representation of all the disciplines necessarily involved in understanding this complexity. Often I'll start a opportunity like this by asking everybody in the room to say hi if you're a technologist. There's a loud response, and then I'll ask for the psychologists to shout out. There's silence. Sociologists to shout out. You can hear a pin drop. Ecologists, historians, political scientists, they're not in the room. So how can we design the complexity involved in a technology but which by definition smashes into the human condition without having these disciplines equally represented around the table? And perhaps the one thing, having then presented the noun-like and the verb-like, is a very straightforward and I think relatively easy to grasp categorization of identity conceptualizations, is that as we digitalize the noun-like, which was previously the domain of legal code, as we render that in technical code, we do for it what technical code does for everything else we've digitalized. And you can sum that up in the simplest terms as removing friction. So whereas actually it's been very tricky in the past for me to prove who I am as I board a plane without needing to proffer up a legal identity, whereas it's been quite tricky to say, yes, I do have a degree from this university, that has been a friction that has prevented that noun-like identity spreading more freely into the quotidian second-by-second instances of human relations. And that's a real concern, because actually, on the topic of concerns, and I'll bring this to a conclusion in a couple of minutes, because I'd love to get some questions, observations, and just your thoughts in general. On the question of concerns, software engineers, software architects have the maxim of separation of concerns so ingrained in them that it's hardly made explicit anymore. It's just the way we operate. And it seems to me that up to a point, particularly when we've got this verb-like identity that's crying out to be digitalized in equal capacity to the noun-like, that we are separating concerns when we shouldn't and failing to do so when we should. So we are separating the concerns of identity and relationships and personal data. They're three nodes. They interact, but they're separate. As opposed to recognizing that the verb-like would say that they are reciprocally defining and co-constitutive. They're meaningless apart. They're edge-centric, if anything, but not node-centric. And yet then, having digitalized the noun-like so that it can pervade every instance of our lives, we have failed to separate it out, separate it from the instances where actually SSI and credentials would actually serve a good purpose, but prevent it, that technology from bleeding in to everything else it means to be human. It means that what we think of in terms of human community and human society. And once we allow it to bleed into everything, we've triangulated everything. And once we've triangulated everything, we end up with the same societal rigidity that triangles lend anything. We see triangles in the Eiffel Tower, Manhattan Bridge, bicycle frames. We introduce triangles for rigidity. But if we want the verb-like dynamism to continue, the very essence of the human condition, then the last thing we should do is, between us all, triangulate everything to death. Now, sometimes I've been taken to be ignorant of SSI. Sometimes I've been told I just don't understand it, because surely this critique can't be leveled. Surely it can't have such distressing emergent consequences. All I'm trying to do is encourage an interdisciplinary discussion here. We need to press pause, in fact, until we can have that interdisciplinary debate, including, by definition, as soon as you invoke interdisciplinarity, a deep study on the emergent consequences. We all know 25 years after the fact of the really negative emergent consequences of social media. None of them were widely spoken of 25 years ago. We need to understand now, through our fellow experts, deep domain understanding of behavioral science and sociology and cultural studies and political science and ecology, how to anticipate negative emergent consequences of the one technology that is most suited to persecution, exclusion, and murder. That's the generative identity ambition, and the more we can engage in that conversation, then the more we can port all the wonderful work, the wonderful protocols, the engineering that's gone into SSI, and port it into a way that can make it flourish in all the ways we hope, but also attenuate all of the distressing outcomes that otherwise would accompany it. So that's what we're up to. So thanks again for allowing me to present that in 12 minutes, I think it took.
Thank you so much, Philip. And we do have a queue of interested folks to comments and questions. Manu, you're on the queue.
Really quickly, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with this community today. I think everything, Philip, that you had to say was great. It you know, there are insights that I think are in the community, but having this discussion, building those bridges, is always a very useful thing to do. I think it's great to call out that we need these other disciplines involved. I think it may not appear as if those disciplines are already here. So to give you an idea, Carrie spoke up on, in the channel, she's a technologist, as well as, I'm sorry, Carrie, I think you said, sociologist as well. Our CTO is, a technologist. I'm sorry, Carrie's a technologist and a psychologist as well. You know, we have doctors involved. Our CTO never really talks about his, psychology degree, but it's there, and it definitely comes across in the work. So, I feel like there's this thing that keeps happening where people assume that, those people don't exist in this community. And it is absolutely true that the number of technologists, outnumber the non-technologists. But I don't think, as you said, right, identity and life is not as black and white as that. You know, we have people that care very deeply about the psychology of these technologies and very deeply about, you know, the effects that it has on society. And so, you know, the question is, what can we do? I mean, this is one of those conversations. What can we do to get more people involved? And rather than saying, you know, oh, these people aren't represented, it's a question of, well, how do we get these people represented? Or are they already represented, but
definitely
people don't know, right? So anyway, I think there's a lot of work to do there. I applaud, you know, you coming into the group and raising awareness about it. I think that's really good. My question is, what do we do from here? How do we change this dynamic?
Just to be absolutely clear, I'm not underestimating how difficult it is to get different disciplines who are so comfortable in their silos together in the same room. Tim Berners-Lee founded Web Science, co-founded Web Science in 2008 with the very intention of not just making it interdisciplinary, but transdisciplinary. And he's struggling, right? So it is no mean feat to be able to convene that kind of group. The only approach I can think of at the moment is that it seems to me that the European Union gets this perhaps more than democratic representatives in other cultures around the world, and appears to understand the imperative that this needs to be interdisciplinary, and seems to understand in certain quarters that there will inevitably be emergent consequences that should ethically be explored before we put code into action. And so I'm trying to work through the European Commission to see if we can get sufficient funding to effectively afford that interdisciplinary conversation so that each of those disciplines is equally represented in the room as opposed to just one or two as they may find themselves in that community. But a point very well made, Manu, definitely.
I'm going to give up my time because we're very close to the end of the meeting. But, Philip, love to hear any last words or how people can get in touch or continue the discussion with you before we close out.
Well, I'm easy to find, very easy to search. I've got a search-friendly name. I haven't built, so generative-identity.org. is where we've started to explain what we think needs to be done in order to support the future of digital identity, to allow it to deliver all the benefits that everybody on this call is excited to be able to deliver to the world more reliably, with less of the dystopian consequences. If that appeals to you, if you definitely know how to tap in to all those other disciplines that I've name-checked, if you have an introduction, then please don't be shy in coming forward and making that connection. Thank you. And thanks again for the time here. Much appreciated.
Thanks so much for joining us, Philip, and thanks, everyone, especially to our scribe, Adrian. Much appreciated. See you all after the holidays. Thanks again.